Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, recruiting animal here on October 16th, 1-6-2019. You know, I don't have really anything special to talk about, but I thought that Jerry and I might have a little chat before we start the show today. I have a question, and I wanted to know what Jerry thought before we get going, okay?
Okay.
Jerry,
all right. Yeah.
Is hair important in recruiting, okay? Because the reason I ask is there was a big controversy this week about AOC, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. She spent $180 on her haircut and got her highlights done. And some people said that's wrong.
Okay. How much did she pay?
$180.
$380?
But that included the color.
Is this Sharon the guest? Oh, hold on. Oh,
yeah.
Then let me just take a step back. Okay, Jerry is going to announce the show, and we'll make this part of the show. Jerry,
okay.
What's
this? This is the recruiting animal.
Thank you, Jerry. You know, Jerry, if you're going to do the show live, you better get a phone that it works on. I mean, you just faded right out.
You're the one on the phone that doesn't work.
Yeah, right.
Don't hit me with this stuff.
Yeah, okay,
dude, you started the show off entirely political. You know AOC is a controversial person.
Yeah,
I don't know why
political.
You do this. I don't understand it.
It wasn't.
Oh, she's not political.
Yeah. Yeah, here's my question. She has to appear in front of people. Recruiters have to, do they have to appear in front of people? Is it going to make a difference if a recruiter has a good haircut or a bad haircut or a candidate? Would that make a difference for you if the candidate, didn't have a good haircut?
No, doesn't make a difference. Most people have good haircuts, so it's pretty much not a factor.
Really. No. Okay, let's go to Sharon. So I'll introduce you after Sharon. You were contributing. How much did she spend? $380?
She spent $300, but that's not just a cut. That was including the low lights and color, and that's where the money really comes in. That costs more than a haircut.
Was that a fair amount? Is that how much do you spend on your
haircut? In D.C., from what I was curious, I read up in D.C., apparently that's not unusual. That's not what I pay for that, but then again, I'm not in D.C.
What do you pay?
Huh.
Here, I think I've paid about $135 for that.
Okay, so hair is important.
Yeah, know what? It's what's known as the pink tax. You know, welcome to our world, gentlemen.
What does that mean?
That means that have you seen any middle-aged women lately with gray hair in recruiting?
I know there's one in the group.
You know why?
10,
they color their hair. Men tend to let it go gray.
And why is it important?
I don't
before
see
we...
hair color. I don't even
okay.
see it.
Well, because there's
even...
a different expectation of youth and beauty on
I'm
women
blind.
Than men. It's just a general thing.
Okay, well, okay, if you had gray hair, you mean somebody would respond negatively to you?
No, I don't. Not much. Very little. But, I mean, just in general, that's as a woman gets older.
Is somebody calling from an airport?
For those kind of services. With her, I think it was more a matter of, looking the looks in the hair, the low lights
give
it more
structure. Let me just say, before we go on, I want to thank my sponsors, PC Recruiter, the Swiss Army Knife of recruiting software, Hire Tool, HIRETUAL, the super duper sourcing tool, and Hone It, HONEIT, the phone interview technology. My guest today is Sharon Dean Clark. No E at the end. C-L-A-R-K. C-L-A-R-K.
Yes.
You can tell she's
yes.
a good talker, but she talks a little too much. And she admitted it on my Facebook group that she's
yes.
too detail-oriented. I am going to be guiding her. I just want to give a warning because some people don't like that when I guide the guest. But trust me, you'll be happy that I do it, okay? Now,
no,
Sharon – yeah, I will, okay? Sharon works for a smallish – growing robotics company, your own words, and it's a unit of a big multinational. She's an American,
mm-hmm.
as you can hear, but she lives in Holland, in Utrecht, apparently,
Ooh.
And she recruits
mm-hmm.
people who make robots, okay?
Yeah.
Right. Her company
wow.
makes mobile
Very cool.
robots and the software that controls them. She recruits for all jobs in Holland and Germany. What languages
mm-hmm.
do you speak? What languages do you speak here?
I speak English and Dutch.
Oh, you speak Dutch?
Oh, yes.
Oh, congratulations. Okay, and you made a point of saying there's 21 nationalities in the business unit. What does that mean? Do you recruit
well,
in Urdu
that means
as well?
That's
or?
Pretty unusual because the business unit I work in Utrecht is only about 200 people.
Okay, and they're all from someplace else.
That's pretty cool that there's 21 nationalities spread across that amount of people.
What's so cool about it?
I can pass people, at the coffee machine sometimes, and I'll hear two people having a very deep conversation in Romanian.
Okay, yeah, that is
cool.
Oh, my God. Romanian is cool. Romanian
is
cool, everybody. You heard it here. What hours do you work?
You heard it here.
What hours do you work?
Regular business hours.
9 to 5?
More like 9:30 to 6:30 because I
Jerry,
tend
you
to find
see how
that
she didn't answer me? I asked a straight question. I had to pull out an answer.
Pretty
Don't
slippery.
Do that.
Pretty slippery.
It's yep. It depends on the day, honestly. Some days I'll start a little later. Some days I'll start earlier if I have a meeting schedule. It varies. I
okay.
have a little bit of flex
okay.
in my time.
Okay, so you don't get up at 6 in the morning like all the super winners do and then do
No,
all,
I'm not a morning person.
And then do all your sourcing at on your own time at home at night. You don't do that, right? You do your sourcing at night after work?
Not very often, but it does happen occasionally if I'm on Facebook and I happen to grab a developer out of Colorado, which happened on a group. I think the most interesting off-time sourcing I ever did is I ended up getting a candidate by hitchhiking.
Oh, you dated a candidate
wow.
by hitchhiking? Okay, I don't know what that means.
The most interesting story I have is, how did you get a candidate? Well, I hitchhiked. There was
okay.
this bridge that I needed to walk under to get to the bus, and it was completely blocked off. Yellow safety codes.
Don't
everywhere.
Drag it out. Remember what
I
warned you. I warned you. Don't drag it
I'm
out.
I'm enjoying the story. Don't let your weird proclivities cut this woman off.
Them, so you can either go with it or not.
Yeah, good
Jerry
point.
Wants to hear it.
Do,
Jerry
do
wants
do
to hear
one. Clam it
okay,
up,
it's a good story.
Animal.
So I'm standing there wondering how am I, going to get through this. Young woman pulls up beside me in her car. Gets out, talks, and this is all in Dutch, of course, talks to the guy in the yellow coat and says, how do I get to such and such place? And I'm thinking, hey, I need to go there. So I just ask her, do you mind if I ride along? And on the conversation on that trip, found out that her boyfriend happened to work for a place we usually like to find candidates, and he was a system engineer, which I was looking for. And that's how I ended up recruiting him, through his girlfriend, who I hitchhiked with.
And do you
awesome.
Believe there was a Was there a supernatural element in that?
Mm. Nothing more than my sparkling personality, no.
Okay, no. The coincidence was it's just too great to be a normal human event. There must be someone
right.
guiding you. Okay, that's something special. Okay. Okay, so you source people. You work for a company, a corporation. You're an in-house recruiter,
mm-hmm.
but you're not
mm-hmm.
just handling incoming resumes. You source people, yes or no?
Of course, yes.
Of course, okay. Apparently that's not always the case. Okay, you've only been a recruiter for 3 years. Is that correct?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's right.
Wow.
How did she sounds like a
so
pro.
You're still,
She's got that.
You're still enthused about it. Yeah. That'll
yeah.
wear off. Yeah. That'll slowly start dying off.
Okay. How did you learn to be a recruiter? You got hired. You didn't know anything about recruiting. How did you learn?
My first job was an agency. Isn't that the gold standard of getting into recruitment, according to this group?
I say the opposite. No, no.
I say no.
I say no, but go ahead. So you were an agency. You were in an agency.
Yes.
And they taught you how.
Yeah, so that I was lucky that the agency I worked for actually did educate their recruiters. I was also lucky that the agency I worked for was one of the few that has been found to not practice discriminatory practices with their candidates. They do a blind test on this every year, like a secret test. The agency I work for always comes out as one of the handful. So I was lucky that, you know, I was also taught ethically. I'm ethical anyway, but I was very lucky that that's where I landed.
Yeah. Okay, but if it was so great, how come you went in-house?
Because the...
Jerry, you want to handle that? Jerry, that's Jerry's question.
No,
Jerry, you
want to
handle that one? Go ahead.
No,
Jerry, you want to handle?
Good question, Animal.
Mm-hmm. And that's because the contingency part of it is what I didn't like.
The pay part.
No, the contingency part. The part that you're always an option, a very last thought option. It's something that I don't like in my personal life or my professional life, frankly. I don't like that part of it. The fact that you and who knows how many other agencies are trying to throw a CV at a company as fast as possible to get someone looked at. I don't like that model.
Okay.
Because, you know,
I like to dive deeper and spend more time with my candidates.
Okay. She doesn't sound like someone who would crack under pressure, Jerry. She sounds tough to me. Okay.
She didn't like the competition.
It wasn't a matter of cracking under pressure. It was a matter of I don't like the fact that I can't.
Yeah, we heard. Okay, we got it. Yeah,
she likes to take her time. It takes her a long time to tell all of her stories, and she wasn't able to squeeze them all in the contingency dog-eat-dog world.
And yet I made the same number of placements as my teammates who were doing more activities to get them, but, you know, whatever.
Uh-huh. Okay,
awesome.
Okay, but look, but you have complained in public that corporate recruiters have no resources. They won't you said some of us
I'm going to read what you said.
You're active on the group. I got you in writing for all kinds of stuff, okay?
And that's fine. I stand by it.
Some of us corporate recruiters have to be more creative because we got no budget for tools or training.
Yeah.
I'm saving up to pay for a course myself. In the meantime, I'm reading books like Full Stack Recruiter to upskill myself. Okay. No resources. What does that mean exactly?
Well, this has been my experience, and I've talked to other people that have similar experience in talent acquisition. They tend to think that we, come out of the box ready to go without, you know, additional tools or training. I haven't had training that I would call, you know, recruiting training in this position.
What kind of training do you want?
I would like to have training on, you know, sourcing tools, for example, beyond LinkedIn Recruiter.
Uh-huh. And how's it working out with Full Stack Recruiter? Are you enjoying the book? Are you learning anything?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely, he gets a lot deeper than just Boolean strings in there, which is cool. Yeah, I like it. I mean, I'm not just reading that one. I'm reading other ones, so it's I have gotten through
have
the whole
you,
book.
Have,
but yeah,
have,
it's a
have,
really
have
good
you
book.
Used Have you used anything you got out of a book in your daily practice?
Sure, I've tried some Boolean strings that I learned in there to see where I could find some people.
That's a vague answer. Oh yeah, I tried to. Does that mean you got any results? Did it do anything? I'm talking about results, not playing around. Next question.
What is your definition of results?
Well, moving on. Posting salary. you said that posting the salary helps with if you've got a job ad. You post ads and you post salary. Go ahead, tell us.
No, true. I find that helps getting candidates in that are probably qualified. And it also helps shut out the ones that wouldn't even be in your ballpark.
And do you put in a range or like 100,000 or 100 to 150? How do you put it in?
Well, I don't. My company will not do that. But I've seen other companies that do.
So, well, what are you talking out of here?
Corporate policy of
come
my,
on.
No, that's the corporate policy of
this
what I deal
like
with.
This sounds like secondhand whistleblower information.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Yeah, he said your story's not valid, okay? That's because you're not doing it yourself. How do you really know, okay?
I know as a candidate how I feel if I see
post,
a job ad that doesn't have
salary.
One as opposed to one that does.
So Michael G. Cox wants to say something. Go ahead.
Okay.
I post salaries in my job, so and it helps to kind of eliminate folks that just simply are not going to fit into this position.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I like that.
How do you post them?
Makes sense.
How do you post them, Mike? How do you post them? A range or a figure?
I'll talk about base salary and on-target earnings, guarantees on commission, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you feel it helps you, right? Because you've compared.
It reduces the number of conversations with candidates that aren't going to work out. Because maybe we can't afford them.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to do an ad, but you have special, because you're in a robotics company, you have special insight, Sharon, into facial recognition software in video interviews. Am I right about that? Did I understand you correctly?
I've talked to someone whose company is doing that.
Oh, okay. Well, hold on a sec. I'll come back to you and get that secondhand information about that as well. Hey, everybody. Recruiting Animal here for Hire Tool, HireTual. You know what that is? That's the super-duper sourcing tool. Amy Miller, she's a favorite on the show. Everybody knows her. She endorses it 120%. You know, she wrote about her favorite sourcing tool on Facebook, and if someone asked her what it is, she said, Hire Tool, hands down. I recruit engineering managers in a big tech company. I've done side-by-side comparisons between Hire Tool and another brand name tool, and there was no contest. Hire Tool provided relevant results, full contact info. The other tool didn't, okay? She's happy to talk to anybody about it. She talks about it all the time. So check it out yourself, HireTual. They've got a free Chrome extension to help you get contact information. And that's it for now, Hire Tool. Okay, what did you want to tell us about facial recognition software? Is it in use? Is it in use, actually, right now?
It is, yes. So
elaborate, please.
This is all over LinkedIn, I think, and elsewhere last week, that Unilever just hired over 100,000 people doing one-way video interviews, and it involved facial recognition technology.
Okay, and what does that determine? What does the facial recognition software determine? Does it sexual orientation or what?
Of course not.
It recognizes
the whole point was to get a more diverse class of people in.
Well, Michael G. Cox, what does it recognize? Well, let Michael G. Cox talk.
That people have faces.
Yeah, they have faces.
It recognizes facial expressions like a widening of the eye or, you know, a smile or a frown, tone of voice as well, word choice to an extent. There's some kind of algorithm in it that compares it to whatever their baseline data is of what would be considered, you know, more, you know, successful.
What are they measuring with it? What are they measuring, like whether you're telling the truth or not? Because apparently that's not easy to tell.
That's a good question. I don't think they'd come out and say it, but I would suspect that's part of it.
Okay, so I thought you had some, you know, real. Okay. Here's something that you do. You sell your city. You live in Utrecht, and
it's a great city.
Okay, but so what does that mean? You sell your city, okay, and you sell it against Amsterdam. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
So what does that mean? You call people up who work in Amsterdam and say, look, you got to move here. It's much better than where you are. Is that what you do?
No, it's not that so much. You have to understand everyone knows Amsterdam. There are unfortunately a lot of people that thinks Amsterdam is the same thing as the entire country. Utrecht is not that well known. So when you're contacting a candidate who's not from this country, you have to, you know, sell the city because they're thinking Amsterdam. So that
well,
is when
well,
you're
what,
selling
what is
it
there? How do you sell
Amsterdam.
It? What do you say?
What it's like to live in. It doesn't have the tourist issue Amsterdam has, for one thing. There are wheelie suitcases all over the place in Amsterdam. It's annoying. It doesn't have the loud frat parties that are going through Amsterdam either. Utrecht is a really, really nice place to live, and it's very close to Amsterdam, so you're not in the middle of nowhere.
Okay,
who
that's
was
not
the
a very good
person
sell.
That you relocated to there from another country?
Good question.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Who was the last person that you relocated there from another country?
A nice young man from Luxembourg.
Okay.
Luxembourg. How far is that?
Compare?
10 miles? How far is that? 10 miles?
No. I also located someone from Colorado in the United States last year from to Utrecht.
Okay.
Well, Luxembourg is crazy expensive.
Germany as well. Well, he was actually living just over the border in Belgium, and like most people, driving into Luxembourg every day to work for that reason. I've, you know, relocated people out of Germany as well.
Uh-huh. And when you're talking to when you're recruiting people in Germany and you only speak English and Dutch, is English enough?
Mm-hmm. It better be, because English is the official internal language of our company. So if they can't speak English, they wouldn't do well.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so everybody in Europe speaks English. Is that what you're saying?
No, I said everyone in my company does.
Okay. Well,
it's the official company
language. So you're calling some people and they don't speak. You say, oh, they say, yeah. And you say, no. Is that what happens?
No, haven't had that problem, because I can tell by screening them first if they have a decent level of English by looking at their profile online, their CV.
Okay, and I gathered that your main source of identifying candidates is LinkedIn. Is that right?
That, online applications, and I get some from social media, also from my meetup group. People get referred to me because I'm known.
What's a meetup group in Utrecht?
Do you,
you have
know
a
meetup.com is?
Yeah, okay. But tell me about
okay.
it. I've never been to one.
Okay. So I run the largest expat meetup group in Utrecht. I started it about 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So my name is known with the economic board, just in general on the social media groups. People get referred to me that way as well. And during my meetup groups, I've recruited a few people just during a meetup group, not even intending to do it, but you start talking to someone, and then you realize they may be a fit.
Uh-huh. Okay. What strange things about Utrecht or Holland would an American encounter, or what would an American find strange about moving there?
Okay, so making friendships with locals is difficult because they book everything in their calendar, their agenda, like really far in advance. So it's hard to – you can't just drop by someone's house. You have to make an appointment. That
uh-huh.
that is a big culture shock for a lot of people. And it's a
uh-huh.
it's a topic of conversation constantly in these expat groups. It makes it hard to
animal,
make friends with locals.
I like that with your animal.
Pardon me?
You like that, don't you, Michael? I mean, you don't want people to pop in. So.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay.
Okay,
I'm moving on. Okay. So you don't have a technical engineering education, right? But you're
no,
here with
these.
No, I have
a Bachelor of Science in Psychology.
Okay, so you're recruiting these really high tech people. Okay,
yes.
How did you adjust to that? I mean, how do you do it? I mean, do you know what you're talking about?
To an extent, I don't know.
Hold
how
on, Jerry's
coach,
Jerry, are you eating? Are you eating in the phone? Do you have your food on the screen?
Dude, in fact, I've got my phone on mute.
Well, you
me.
Shouldn't have your phone on mute, because you should be helping me with some questions here. Okay.
Hey.
Do you need help?
Yeah, I do. I don't think I'm catching fire with you. I don't think you're enjoying the interview. That's my gut feeling.
I am enjoying the interview. What made you
I haven't got anything that's turned you a question that turned you on. But this question, you're going
to
answer, okay?
I am not going to let go.
You
need to manage your expectations, Michael, if you think this interview is going to turn me on.
It's recruiting animal on this show, okay? It's recruiting animal. You want to talk to me? Animal. Hey, animal, okay? I'm happy with the questions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's my important question. You're recruiting technical people. You don't know anything technical yourself. How do you handle that?
The way most people handle it, you do your research. You talk to people who are doing
what does
that
mean?
What you're recruiting for.
What does that mean, research? Give me an example, okay?
An example. So I'm recruiting a new kind of, well, for me, a role I haven't recruited for in the software department, for example. I'll look up online, you know, what this role means, what the usual specs for it are, and then I'll talk to the, you know, the manager who's recruiting for it and see what they're really looking for. And then I talk to someone who's maybe doing that role and see what's really important. I talk to people
You're talking vague. You're vague. Something wrong with me. I never understand what the guests are getting at, right? What do you do when you go to the hiring manager? Do you
understand what the guests are getting at?
Let me get to what I'm – let me finish, okay? do you go to the hiring manager and say, look, give me a checklist – with a bunch of buzzwords and questions that I can ask, knockout questions. So even if I don't know what I'm saying, if this person seems to know what it is, I'll think they're okay. Do you ask specifically for questions? What is it? You say, oh, I asked Dr. the hiring manager. What do you talk about?
I talk about I usually get a really long list of requirements just to be straight. The list of requirements we get is really, really long. And part of that conversation is going to be to see what in that list is probably in the nice to have as opposed to the requirement, because that's almost always the case. That's part of the conversation. Also, some of those buzzwords in there, you'll have different kinds of scripting languages, for example, that would be equivalently qualifying you, but they won't be listed on there. So I ask questions like that.
But it sounds like you've got these difficult hiring managers that just don't know what to tell you, have to work it out of them. Is that right?
No, not really. I mean, they're managers. I mean, hiring managers, they're hiring when they're hiring, but their job is to manage their team, not to necessarily recruit. That's my job.
Okay.
So
well, you actually
get this information out of them.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you have to really. So a good recruiter can't sit down with a hiring manager and expect him or her to deliver because they don't know how to do that. The recruiter has to go in.
That depends entirely on the hiring manager. Some do and some don't.
Okay. But what? The recruiter has to be prepared to go in and know enough to know when he or she has all the information she needs, right?
Should be, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, and to press these people, did you ask if anybody has a program to train their hiring managers on interviewing and any engineering team members who will participate in the interviews?
Mm-hmm.
Do you do that? Do you force these people to learn how to?
I don't force them. They were very happy to have the training that I made and provided.
Uh-huh. Well, you said. No. You said that there's engineers who think there's engineers who don't want the training. They think they can wing it, and you have to talk them into it.
I have had a few of those, yes.
And what did you do? How did you strong-arm them into doing what was right?
I explained to them what the advantages of it would be.
Okay. Do that to me.
Do I have to?
Yeah, you know what? You're just too vague. I want to be nitty-gritty. I said Hans or whatever, Jan. This is why I want you to do this, okay?
Okay. So, you know, I would ask you first, what do you usually do in an interview? Do you go in with a plan? Do you have planned questions? Are they always the same? Or do you just kind of wing it? And your answer would help determine how I would, you know, persuade you. So a lot of times from this I would get, I wing it. And I would say, okay, this is why that's not such a good idea. When you wing it, you want to have consistency across what you're asking different candidates, which means you can't compare effectively. It also means you're more likely to have bias creep in. And I would go from there. But you don't want me to get into details, Animal, so let's stop it at that.
Yeah, sometimes details just good. Just like I'll use that against you like you did for me. Depends. Okay.
That's fine.
Okay, so hold on. So do you make sure that, like, how many interviews, how many people do your candidates have to see?
That also varies per role, to be honest, and per team, because some of the teams are bigger than others. Some people are in shared services, for example, and then they'll need to see more people because they're working with teams across countries. The most complicated one I think I had, well, one of them was an HSE advisor, and that's the health and safety is shared service. So I had, for an example, a remote interview that involved people in 3 countries in 4 time zones.
Okay,
so
but they were all
UK,
on at the same
time.
That was
the US
panel interview. Was that a here's the reason I'm asking. Okay, if somebody
mm-hmm.
has to go
okay.
through 3 or 4 interviews, and you're
mm-hmm.
you're guiding the interviewers, are
yes.
you giving them all? They're all asking the same questions, so this poor candidate has to answer the exact same questions every time in separate interviews.
No, they don't. They don't have it. They don't have it organized on that level, honestly.
Okay.
No, we don't have set questions that usually. Now, there was one process where there was more structured, but we're talking a director level interview. So that one had more structure and it had more steps. It's the longest step process I think I've seen.
I'm going to do an ad.
Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Recruiting Animal here for PC Recruiter. Okay. Nick Mazur. I've told you about him before. He is a recruiter, and here's what he says. He says, we use PC Recruiter, and we love it. He said, I've demoed a ton of systems, and they have – this means they, means PC Recruiter, they have the most robust set of features. Other products do 1 or 2 things better, but overall, I think PC Recruiter has the most features. We do, and we find it useful. We do multiple industries and 4 different types of searches, and it's very, very versatile. And Michael G. Cox knows why. Why is it versatile, Michael G. Cox?
I've heard it's configurable.
It is. It's configurable. And if you don't know how to configure it yourself, they will help you. Okay? So go check them out at pcrecruiter.net. Okay. Now, the guest actually gave me some questions. You know, I always think mine are better, but I'll come back. You know what? Here's a question.
You know?
here's a question, though. Why do people leave jobs? Okay, there's this statistic floating around that 75% of the time it's because of their boss. I don't believe that. What do you say?
I think that's probably a lot of the time, but I've also seen people leave jobs because, you know, the commute is too far. Their life has changed. Maybe they're about to move. Maybe they're not getting enough money and they can't advance in that company. They've hit a ceiling and they go somewhere where that's possible. But,
okay.
Yeah, I could see that 75%, yeah.
You think 75%? Michael G. Cox, are you a 75% man?
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that all of those, yes, all of those.
Which most?
The whole boss situation is probably definitely at the top.
Really? Ooh. Jerry, are you a 75% man? You're in a different kind of position. Are you still there? Jerry's eating lunch or something important. I assure you. Okay. I don't think that's really the case. I think it's for money, and I think it's for professional opportunity. Okay.
Yeah,
and
but
there's
that
another...
has a direct impact on it, though. Your manager is going to have a huge impact on you making more money and your professional opportunity. So you could say
no,
that.
No, I think that's
75%.
The company. No, I think it's the company. Maybe you want your manager's job, and he or she is a young person, and they're not going to move up for a while. There's not a lot of mobility there. That's That is something that's beyond the individual. There's a related question, okay? Is top talent ripe for the picking? You know, you keep hearing again and again, every article, most people hate their job, like 80% of them, and want to leave. Do you find that's true? 80% of the working people want to leave.
I haven't found that so much true in the, I don't know, in the software development area that the people I've talked to. But I don't know, what about Michael G? Michael C. Cox probably has more.
It's G. It's G as in George.
G,
not
sorry.
C as in Carl. Michael G. Cox.
G.
Oh, G.
You have an opinion?
You're saying that 80% of people, what?
They hate their jobs and they want to leave, so they should be easy to recruit,
no.
Theoretically.
Mm-mm. No, that's not true at all.
What percentage of people want to leave?
I'd say slightly under half.
Okay. Anybody else online want to? Everybody, you know, I'm only calling the people I know. But anybody else got an opinion? They want to say
half,
something?
No, not even
Jerry,
half. No way. Not even
so half.
Half
of the people don't hate.
Not even
okay,
half.
Jerry, you missed the other question. Okay.
I got disconnected by you somehow.
No, you didn't. Okay. 70. Okay. Of people who actually leave their jobs, are 75% of them leaving because of the boss? They hate their boss?
Usually,
you believe that?
Yeah.
Gee whiz.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only time I ever left a place was because of my boss.
Yeah, you never had a real job, okay?
I had multiple real jobs, dude.
Yeah,
and every time I left, it was because of the boss.
Yeah, not for the last 30 years, okay?
Yeah. Are you disputing that fact? I mean, that's just pretty much a fact. Did everybody agree?
Everybody agreed
but
me.
Pretty much, okay. Yeah.
Dude, you are so clueless, man. I shake my head every time I realize you don't know anything about any of this.
Yeah, right.
It,
okay.
It blows my mind.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It really does.
Yeah, okay. Fine, thanks. Okay. Anyway.
You're welcome.
Yeah, okay. My memorable experience when a candidate accepted a job offer. This is what you sent me as an interesting thing to talk about. I don't even understand what you're saying there. What is it?
Oh, well, I'll tell you why. You know, one of the pictures you used for my intro was that picture of me holding that book up. It was a picture of me in front of one of our robots.
Yeah.
So the reason I got that book. I'm sorry, what did you say?
I didn't say anything. I said, oh.
Oh, okay. The reason I got that
book. Hey, side note, animal, unmute, Kathy. Unmute Kathy. I don't know why you do this to people every single show.
Because Kathy's line is terrible. That's the line that was making all the noise. Sorry, Kathy.
Way
no,
to go, Kathy.
I'm sorry.
I have so much
to contribute throughout this whole call. And
okay, now you could. Okay, your line is a little more clear now. Okay.
Okay.
But I'm sorry because I know if I do anything to you, you're gonna go on Facebook and tell everybody how rotten I am. Okay.
Of course.
I don't want.
That's how I heard about it.
Anyway.
Okay.
I have.
We're creating animal tradition, Kathy.
I know. Yeah. I know, and I'm always like, you know, my opinions mean nothing. But
right.
Do
go ahead.
I do have a few things to back. Mm-hmm. I have to go backwards. My husband represented the guy who invented facial recognition when he was a patent attorney. And I met with the guy, brilliant, and also, you know, cutthroat. But anyway, that was an interesting little tidbit. The second thing I wanted to touch on was the whole interview process and the hiring process between the recruiter and the hiring manager. And my belief has always been, and the way I've always been trained, is that you do a very intricate intake session with the hiring manager, and you have to remember they have metrics and you have metrics. So it's only in everybody's best interest to make, you know, the time to close as short as possible. So I believe that as a recruiter, you definitely have the right and should be demanding that your hiring managers, you know, work with you. And if they don't, go above them. I mean, you have to just throw your weight in front of them and say, hey, you want this that fast, you're going to have to work with me. And also, maybe it's just in the States and in big corporations, but they do have interview sessions that are all the same questions asked to the same people all of the time.
Yeah.
Because in the United States, anyway, it's against the law if you don't. So, but I think you sound great for being out just 3 years. I mean, I've been doing it over 20. So you sound really, really good. But there were just
I think she's tough, just like you said. And when she leaves the room, the hiring managers say, "Stupid American." I'll bet you that happens. Okay.
It could. Yeah. I know. I don't know how you deal with it culturally.
I understand what they said, and I can give it right back.
I don't know if it's. I have a question then. Is it culturally different in the way you would interact with the hiring managers where you live versus how we do it in the U.S.?
Well, that's hard for me to answer because I've never recruited in the U.S.
Okay.
She got married to a Dutchman. She got married to a Dutchman. She was over there and then got her this job over there. Okay? That's
right. Okay.
I was married to a Dutchman when I got into the country, and I stayed after we divorced.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You should be on 90 Day Fiancé.
I should be what?
On 90 Day Fiancé.
That
show.
No. I was married for years. I did my time and got my dual citizenship. I remarried to
you.
A Brit.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, and we both work in international companies, so, you know. I'm the one who speaks really fluent Dutch.
Yeah, okay, so you said, you were telling, before we gave Kathy her corner, okay, you were telling us about some story about a candidate. But first I'm going to do an ad, okay? So you're going to tell us about somebody accepted an offer. Okay, hi, everybody.
Sure.
Recruiting Animal here for Honeit, H-O-N-E-I-T, .com. It's phone interview technology. It records your interviews and turns the key questions and answers into separate audio clips to help the hiring managers hear the motivation, the personality, and the enthusiasm that the recruiter just heard. You can't get that from a resume. And you just heard everybody talking. They have to work with those hiring managers. They have to sell the hiring managers on their candidates. And if you want to get a hiring manager excited about a great candidate, you want to share some of the sizzle you yourself heard with Honeit. Also turns the interview into a searchable transcript as well. Okay. The only thing I worry about with the Honeit, what if the candidate doesn't have any sizzle? I mean, don't you find that sometimes, Sharon, that the candidates don't have any sizzles? They're wet noodles?
Possibly, but some jobs are really good for that.
What?
I mean, that could be a really good cultural match for the particular team. Not everyone's going to have sizzle.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't necessarily mean sometimes... a requirement.
Okay, so sometimes the culture is unsizzly. Is that what you're saying?
The particular, hiring manager may be unsizzly for all I know, so it may be a good match in that way.
Okay, so you go back to your story, okay? Let's not argue about dumb stuff.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Right. Not everyone can be an extrovert, and we shouldn't expect them to be. So
Expect them. I do. Hold on. The guest from just a couple of weeks ago or last time the show, he said that a recruiter has to have the gift of gab. Okay? That's an extrovert.
That's the same thing as being an extrovert.
No, that's ridiculous.
You don't think so?
Didn't Amy Miller say that she's not one? She said that she wasn't.
Yeah, she's confused, okay? She's 100% extroverted.
She's probably on the introvert side of an ambivert. I'm on the extroverted side of that.
Ambivert is a cop-out. If you're an ambivert, you're a nothing. There is no introvert or extrovert.
True. If you can't deal with nuance, you're not going to do well in the world.
Okay. Well, go back to your story. Let's get it out of
So, my story. About one of the most memorable responses I had when a candidate accepted an offer. I called him up, he answered the phone, and he told me he just got the letter from the Dutch Immigration Service for his citizenship, and I was the first person he got to tell. There was sheer joy in his voice. This guy was a Syrian refugee. and we hired him as an engineer. No company would take a chance on him because you couldn't track down his education because obviously things were bombed. So just the joy in his voice, and I was the first person he got to tell that. That was pretty cool.
They have robotics designers in Syria?
He was not a robotics designer. He was a different kind
position?
Of engineer. He was a mechanical engineer.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was for a different department. I recruit across the entire business, including assembly technicians, you know, service engineers. That's very different than someone who's a software engineer, a DevOps, or a C++. There's a whole lot of moving parts.
Okay.
But also,
You
didn't mention that was the issue. The issue was, you know, the paperwork and getting his immigration through and confirming his stuff. The guy's from Syria. Imagine confirming an education in a – God, are you even paying attention?
I did. The only part that interested me was that you can actually recruit somebody for her kind of company who's coming from Syria. It's like a backwards country.
Yeah.
Okay. Am I allowed to say that now?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Redact my voice and likeness from every bit of this show.
You have to understand, Europe has a lot of Syrian refugees in it.
Yeah.
And there's some very quite educated and also very technically educated and experienced refugees that are in Europe from Syria.
Didn't know that. See, there you go. Okay. What about this? You have said, you declared on Facebook that the standard metrics are antiquated, okay, like a funnel where, you know, if you make a certain amount of you want to talk about that? What kind of metrics do you believe
in? Oh, yeah, that was part of my problem with contingency recruitment. The fact that you would have to do maybe 15-minute sessions with a candidate and limit it to that and spend most of your time, you know, pushing more people through the funnel instead of, I prefer to, find the more qualified people, spend a little more time on them. That's what I meant And that's why
we always
contingency.
We always hear that corporate recruiters they get like 30 recs or 50 recs, and they're dealing with 10 different hiring managers, and that they're totally overburdened.
True, I had 45 when I started.
Yeah. So what are you telling us that you were pushed too hard for time when you were at the contingency firm? I mean, really, 45 jobs?
That's not what she said.
What did she say? Well, you go, Mr. Smarty Pants. What did she say?
She didn't like the contingency aspect.
She added something else, okay?
I said, you cracked under the pressure, which is what you're now saying under 45 recs. She clarified, no, it had nothing to do with the pressure. It was being a contingent, a side option.
Yeah.
You aren't even listening to the people on your show.
I did.
Yes.
She said
that. I like the fact that, when you're inside, you have a direct line to the people, the decision makers. You have more influence. I can walk up to their desk and they can't ignore me because I'm standing right in front of them.
Jerry, she also said that was the reason she got divorced. She didn't like being a contingent spouse. Didn't you say that?
Excuse me? I did not say that.
Let's hear more about that. What led up to the divorce?
I didn't say that at all.
I thought you said we could go back. It's recorded. You said I don't like being contingent in a marriage either. Didn't you say that?
No, I did not say that. I said, in general, I don't like being an option in my personal life or my professional life. That is
personal
just a
life.
Baseline.
That's
has nothing
okay.
to do
that's
with.
That's the term you used. Okay, yes, that's right.
Yeah, and it doesn't have anything to do with marriage or not. That's just the general fact that I have a spine, and there it is.
Okay, there you go. Is it really bad for women in tech?
It's not easy. If you look at the sheer numbers, the odds are against you.
Okay, no, the numbers are abstract. You're recruiting in tech, okay? There was one woman posted on Twitter. She said, I'm tired of being told to act like a white man and then penalized for it. And she was white, by the way, okay? So is that, like, real that, I think you also commented on, why women – don't negotiate, that they if they act like men.
Oh, I've had that blowback on me myself.
Yeah. Go ahead, talk about that. Is it hard for a woman to negotiate?
I experienced that myself in a job when I pressed for a salary increase during a contract extension, and it totally ruined my relationship with the manager, which made my job really hard to do afterwards.
Okay, what did you do that was so soured him or her on you?
Not smile and just say thank you very much and accept what they offered without any pushback.
Well, how did you push back? I'd like to hear the exact words, okay?
I said, this is what I think, the increase should be, and this is what I bring to the table. This is why. And, apparently that wasn't good.
Were you rude?
Not at all.
And was this in Europe or in the United States?
Yes, in the Netherlands.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so is that your only experience, or have you seen it elsewhere, or is it isolated? Is it that your only experience so far?
You know what I've noticed, that women candidates tend to, when they speak to me, they tend to push less for higher numbers than male candidates will sometimes. I've just noticed that from the times I've dealt with women as opposed to men. Men will push more. In general,
can I ask whose fault would that be?
I'm not saying it's anyone's fault. I'm just saying that's the way it is.
I'm just throwing that out there. I'm just wondering, as a participant on this in this discussion, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, where does the blame lie for women not negotiating?
Well, I think part of it is we've experienced that, we know there's lines that we have to tread that men don't. And when you push over it, you get penalized for it. So usually you don't negotiate because you're not an idiot.
Okay.
You don't want more money.
Okay, she's been burned. People, other people, I guess they learn for the – okay.
I do negotiate, but I'm just saying I've experienced that myself, and I know other people who have too. So.
Well, then it must be easier for you to hire women than men because. Yeah, it must be easier to work with women because they're more pliable. Then they don't press back. Is that true?
Why would I want someone to be pliable?
So because they'll take the money that you're offering them.
I want someone to have a fair offer because the worst thing I can do is give them less and then they're gone in 6 months because another company comes along and gives a market rate. That would just be stupid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it doesn't sound like you've noticed that companies hiring young, pretty recruiters now that we're talking about women. That was a topic.
I knew this was going to come up. You've been priming the group for this all week, I've noticed.
All week?
Yeah, he's been posting all these things during the week. I saw.
Hold on, somebody called me. Somebody called me, and he said this is a problem. It's a problem in his business. Okay, a lot of these startups they're hiring young, pretty women, and he feels that they're luring the engineers into their companies like that. Okay, he said not a well-established company, but startup.
Kathy's phone again.
I didn't cut her off. Let me see.
No, I'm saying cut her off. It's getting crazy. It's all that stupid noise again.
No, she's not even on. She hung up.
On this call. She
There's
must
no
have just
noise.
Hung up then. Yeah, the noise is gone.
Yeah. Okay. You want to answer that, or do you want to pass on that? Want to pass on that question? Jerry, do you have anything to say about that?
Not necessarily. I've had someone ask me the same question. One of my engineers asked me that.
What did he ask?
He said, is there a reason there are so many, recruiters in tech that look a certain way? I think in this country, it's also because a lot of people become a recruiter right out of school. I saw it when I was at my first agency. There were a lot of, right out of school, young, pretty, usually blonde women in recruitment, and some guys too, but it was overwhelmingly female. And some of them stay in it. and they may go into a technical company and other, and a lot, you know, just go out into something else after their first job. I think it's partially from that. But there is the whole booth babe phenomenon. It's there for a reason.
The what phenomenon?
Booth babe.
Booth babe. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So that's a real,
yeah.
That's real. That is real, according to you. Okay.
Animal, I'm
sure,
kind of
I'm sure,
an idea
I'm sure some of it's real.
Show.
I'm not saying they're not qualified, but, I mean, looks do matter.
Jerry, did you have something? Jerry?
I'd like to hear Jerry's idea.
An idea for next week's show.
Yeah.
Young, hot, Dutch recruiter babes. Any chance we could just kind of have a special, you know, like a...
That'll have to be in November.
I hate to break it to you, but Dalton Cruz is not a recruiter.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon.
Okay.
Sharon.
Yeah.
Sharon, how many candidates do you submit for any one job, generally speaking?
Oh, that depends. I'll usually want to submit maybe 4.
Really?
Yeah.
It's easy for you to find. These are highly technical jobs. You can find 4 people who are suitable?
On some of them, yeah.
Some of them, or like most of them? Come on.
Some of them, yes. Some they'll be one. They'll maybe be 2. But my candidates are not all within the country, though. I'll submit candidates who live, you know, in a country nearby who are in the process of trying to move as well. It's hard to find candidates that are actually in the country, as you know, if you want those kind of numbers.
Are there a lot that want to move there?
Jerry's got a question for you.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Are there a lot of candidates that want to move there? I mean, do you have a steady stream of interested people that want to move?
Yeah, there's a decent stream, yes. It used to be more before the economy in Southern Europe improved, of course, but you've got a lot of people out of Southern Europe, Greece, that sort of area, Russia. Don't even get me started about how many candidates are trying from Saudi Arabia and India.
Well, you mentioned a candidate, a developer from Denver.
Yes.
Was that person originally from the Netherlands, or are they from Western Europe, or they just want to move there?
No, we wanted to move there. So I'm in a Facebook group where his wife was in, and there was a conversation in a thread where I just mentioned that I was looking for Java developers.
Mm-hmm.
She said, hey, my husband's one of those. He's not even on social media. So another case of, you know, the spouse or girlfriend hooked us up.
Well, so how does the salary compare? And the reason I ask,
mm-hmm.
I've recently started recruiting for a few locations in Europe and the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And the salaries appear to be about half of what they are for the same role here. And that seems almost an insurmountable emotional change. Whether logically it's really the same, I don't know, but it would just feel different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's absolutely true.
That is hard to deal with. That's the first thing I have in a conversation with these people is like, have you done any research into what the salary levels are like? Anyone could go into PayScale Netherlands and find this out. But that is the first barrier. If they haven't done any research, that would also bring me to wonder, are they very serious about it?
Yeah, good point. Okay.
And do you find that PayScale.com is
in the Atlantic moving? That's a big deal. There's a lot of stuff you have to do to get that done.
Okay, but hold on a second. Are you saying that PayScale.com delivers accurate figures?
It's accurate. It's not down to the dime accurate, but it's accurate enough to tell you that there's a huge discrepancy between those two countries.
Uh-huh. Okay. Good question, Jerry. You know what? I haven't even, you know, I don't know why I asked a bunch of general questions. There's a lot of nitty-gritty questions I like to ask, and I didn't get to ask them. It's my own fault. So you'll have to come back another time.
Are you sure you want me back?
Yeah. You're a good talker. I just have to guide you a bit.
Yeah, I talk too much,
right? No, you were very good, very lively. We can hear you, but I like nitty gritty. Okay, and I didn't lead you to the nitty gritty, but I'm going to ask the last question is going to be kind of okay. How do you deliver an offer? Like, you know, Rich Rosen, who's a fantastic recruiter, he says he always when he talks to somebody on the phone, he hams it up. He adds a little energy, right? And then I posted on my Facebook group. Okay, that this person said when you deliver an offer, it has to be with energy. You have to get the person excited. What's your take on that?
Well, that's true. You should be doing that through the whole process. Every time you talk to that candidate, you should be delivering that kind of energy.
Well, just deliver it to me. Show me how
it
is.
You don't have to be an extrovert to do that, though.
Really? Really? It sounds like an extrovert would be more inclined to do that. Okay. Now, do that.
Yeah.
Like, how does that?
Certainly more
inclined.
Yeah,
but explain
but
to me if I'm a pure extrovert, explain to me why after I have one of my meetups where I'm socializing with 80 to 100 people in a room, the next day the only thing I want to do is just to stay home and not go out and see anyone for a day. A true extrovert would not have that.
Okay, hold on. Can you imagine Michael G. Cox, you know, hamming it up to give or deliver an offer? I can't. Okay.
I don't know him well enough to say.
Michael G. Cox is going to have to on the next show. He's going to have to show us how he delivers an offer. Okay. In the meantime, I'd like to thank Michael G. Cox. I'd like to thank Kathy, who you know always has complaints. Jerry showed up and stayed for the show. Okay, that's a miracle. And our new friend, Sharon Dean Clark. Thank you!